Mommy and Daddy are the cutie mark crusaders. They won't stop until they watch all the movies. Watching a movie together as wife and husband. Yeah.
Well, hello.
Welcome to He Saw, She Saw.
If you're just joining us, I am Corey.
And I am Keith.
And we love movies.
Just not the same ones.
So we make each other watch a movie that we love.
But the other has not seen, has no interest in seeing, and would never see unless we were doing a podcast.
And we talk about it.
So Corey, what film do I get to see this week?
Well, I like to call it the SK special because it's Stephen King and Stanley Kubrick, and it is The Shining.
Nice. I'm actually looking forward to this one.
Yeah.
So I've never seen it. Really would never have taken the time to see it. So, but I'm confused as to why you like it. So why do you like The Shining?
Well, I, as everyone knows, I was not allowed to, watch scary things when I was younger.
Like Scooby-Doo.
In the news. Because it would give me nightmares. And my mom was like, you know what? We are just going to cut all that out so we don't have problems sleeping.
Life is short and I need sleep. So you're not watching Scooby-Doo anymore.
And I now understand how she feels. But anyway, was not allowed to watch scary things. Definitely was not allowed to read Stephen King novels. However, I did get my hands on a couple of novels.
Was it Grandma Betty again?
It wasn't Grandma Betty. It was actually, it was my English teacher. Mm-hmm. He really wanted us to read. So he had this shelf of his personal Stephen King novels that he would let us read. And I borrowed, Misery. And I also read The Shining.
Things that would definitely get me fired today if I did that in my classroom.
So, yeah, I didn't actually see The Shining then until I was probably a young adult. And the thing about it is it is creepy and it is weird, but I feel like the demon quotient is really low. I refuse to see anything that has demons in it. Like I will never watch Paranormal Activity. I will not watch Poltergeist.
For a moment of behind the scenes here, the original pairing we had for this was The Shining and Into the Mouth of Madness. Mm-hmm. Very high demon taking your soul and dragging you to hell for the rest of eternity to that movie. So,
well, and I'm glad I asked.
Yeah, I wanted you to talk to me, be able to sleep, still not divorce me. So
I appreciate it. I'm going to say something that's going to be a little strange to hear probably, and no one's going to understand it.
Okay.
Jack Nicholson in The Shining kind of reminds me of my dad.
That does not make any sense at all. I haven't even seen it. And I know Jack Nicholson is like flat out crazy in this movie. So what what is going on here?
Just, just his mannerisms and kind of like the way he talks and just kind of how lives when he's walking around and he's being all manic. It just kind of reminds me of my dad.
Okay. No. Has your dad ever held an axe?
Held an axe?
Yeah.
Yeah. He owns an axe.
Has he used an axe inside?
Well, yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's my dad.
Oh, jeez. Okay. But your dad has never used an axe to break down a door, correct?
The door was not installed at the time.
Oh,
okay. So let me just, okay. Our family, we get our money's worth, right? So if a piece of furniture is breaking down or not working correctly, then he'll just chop it up with an axe and throw it in the fireplace.
So he has never cornered any member of your family into a room and then used an axe to chop it down.
I could see him like, here's Johnny or whatever. I could see him doing that.
I can see him smiling with an axe mischievously, but yeah, I cannot see him chasing anyone.
No,
I cannot
he wouldn't.
See him breaking down a door. He's not that type.
No. So Jack Nicholson reminds me of my dad, but not in a bad psycho like way.
In no way that CPS, the FBI, or law enforcement needs to be called.
No, no one needs to call them.
Okay.
But anyway, let's segue. We haven't talked about your movie at all. Keith, what movie will you have me be watching?
Well,
is that grammatically correct?
I will take it. So originally it was Into the Mouth of Madness. And then once I realized, because I'd only seen that movie once, I was like, oh boy. So I checked with you and that was a no-go. So I thought about maybe not horror as much as like psychological drama of a man. Like all I know about The Shining is Jack Nicholson goes crazy.
Mm.
And so I'm like, okay, what's a movie about a man kind of deteriorating over time and you're not sure if he's crazy or if he's not crazy? And mm-hmm. that would be this amazing movie that I only saw once in, I think it was 2000, which is Memento.
Wow.
Which is an and I've only seen it once, but it made a huge impression on me. Hmm. Absolutely loved it. I cannot wait to see it again.
Well, you know, I'm game. So let's go watch these two crazy flicks.
Here's The Shining. Okay.
All right. Well, we have just watched The Shining.
We did. And I think this is going to be a different review than I've normally done in the past. So,
oh.
Yeah. So what did you think? So the first question is always to the original person. So mm-hmm. my lady.
Oh.
Do you feel like The Shining stood up?
Well, the shots were just magnificent. If it's just a normal scene and you have the sound off, it's just Jack Nicholson walking into a room. Right. Mm-hmm. But because we have this crazy music, this like kabuki style, like drumming, like happening, and then the different camera angles and the lighting and just like the super zoom that happens and just the way people are delivering lines, it just made it so creepy and like just weird.
I do not understand why you like this movie. It's like everything that Corey hates and keeps her up
at
night.
I know.
But it sounds like it held up.
Yeah, I love this movie. I don't know why I love this movie so much, because as you said, it's like everything that like scares the crap out of me.
Yeah, and it
keeps me up at night.
It breaks so many rules
yes.
that I normally just cannot stand.
It's just like annoying. Yeah. I don't know. It just works.
Okay, so it stood up, it sounds like. So
yeah, I still
just so you know, one of the things that will be different about this review is we're going to spoil the crap out of it. So I normally avoid spoilers, but yeah, it's been 40 years and I'm the last person on earth to see it for the first time.
So
if you haven't seen the movie before, the basic pitch is it's about a struggling writer played by Jack Nicholson who takes his family to the Overlook Hotel to watch it over the winter where evil lurks. And so we have this breakdown of this character. And again, it was
mental breakdown.
So it's different than the book. I did a little bit of Wikipedia-ing on the book and about the Stephen King special. And
Stephen King denounced it. So, yeah.
And later on, in later years, more recently, he's been softer about it. He's kind of seeing. So it's not the movie he would have made, mm-hmm. but he seems to be softening a bit about it because it is such just an iconic movie. Mm-hmm. But one of the interesting things about this movie is where it starts. So again, we're shooting in the 80s, so we're going to have the titles all at the beginning. And it starts with this huge...
Can I just say something real quick?
Sure.
About the opening? Mm-hmm. You just jogged my memory. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a way aside, so remember what you're... Okay, so we saw this movie. Terrible, terrible movie. It's called Birdemic.
Oh, my God.
You remember that movie?
You cannot bring up that movie.
No, I have to. I have to. So the thing was, is we had looked into it because we research everything. We're like, what the heck is happening? So the guy who did Birdemic is a Kubrick fan. Mm-hmm. So the thing about it is the opening sequence that you're talking about, one of the magnificent shots that I'm just like breathtaking shots, right, is the car is winding up this mountain road and it's going on and on and on and on to show like this is really way out of the way.
Yeah, there's a purpose for it.
Yes,
which is crucial.
And it's like a helicopter or airplane shot. Yeah. And it's just like, and then there's these weird, like super plain, like the font for the titles is like Arial or something.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, what
and
is
bright
this?
Turquoise.
A porno? I don't. Just... So, I mean, not be, you know, because the titles are so like weird. But anyway, mm-hmm. so the guy who.
Well, with Jack Nicholson, you never know.
Okay.
So.
It's true. So the guy who did Birdemic, he does the exact same thing, but he does it from inside the car because he can't afford a helicopter.
Oh my gosh.
He has the same like the same font for the titles, and it goes on for 10 minutes.
It would be interesting to time it because it was so long. Like with Birdemic, you're like, is there a movie?
Yes.
What is going on?
And there's absolutely no purpose for it. Whatsoever, except that he drove to a restaurant. Like, that's it. But anyway, if you're in the market for a bad movie, like The Room type bad movie, it's so bad. But you have to watch it.
We might have to review that one.
We might.
That one.
Like, for a special, like,
the
we
worst,
hate this.
But. Worst feature films ever. I think Birdemic is right up there with The Room.
I think it's worse than The Room. But this movie, so sorry to sidetrack you so hard.
So back on track.
So we're back on the road.
Yeah, so we have this beautiful shot, and we're seeing how far away this hotel is from any sort of civilization. And right away, one of the things that really struck me was found footage films are so popular now. But I felt like those opening scenes where Jack Nicholson is basically trying to get the job mm-hmm. to look after the hotel.
The interview scene.
It totally reminded me. It was like off. And again, Stanley Kubrick throughout this entire movie breaks so many rules. But it's clearly like the script isn't polished. The camera shots are kind of weird. They're not your typical shots you would use in a movie. Mm-hmm. It really made me feel like just kind of a voyeur who was just like, oh, Jack Nicholson is just talking to these people. And so it kind of really placed me in the movie more so than a typical polished Hollywood production. And so right off the bat, there's tons of foreboding and foreshadowing in this movie. So we learn.
Tell them about the
in the midst of this, the guy who's the head of the interview is basically just like, oh, hey, and by the way, you know what? There was a guy a few years ago who just took his wife and kids and just chopped them up.
Went psycho.
So are you still interested? And Jack just laughs it off and like, oh, my wife loves true crime. Yeah, no problem.
Well, and they casually mention within the first 2 seconds, oh, and this place is built on an Indian burial ground.
Yeah, so there's just all sorts of, yeah. So it's that's interesting. And then we cut. Jack Nicholson obviously is very, very good in this movie. We cut to his wife, who I think does better than Jack, and that's Shelley Duvall. Mm-hmm. And Shelley Duvall is there with their son. And their son, I think, is the best actor in the whole movie.
Oh, my gosh.
And so there's this guy named Danny Lloyd, who I looked up, has done like 4 things. And like the last thing was for Dr. Sleep, the sequel to The Shining, uh-huh. like a year or two ago. And that kid in this movie
is amazing.
I mean, literally he's got his baby teeth still.
Yeah, he's like
and he's
8?
Better than like 98% of all other actors in the known universe.
And not just with like delivering lines, but reacting.
Oh, yeah. There's
insane.
And he has to play possessed. And he plays possessed like no veil. Like just like, oh, I'm possessed now. And I'm just like, that kid's possessed or like it has a multiple personality. It's just
or
like
an imaginary friend as his mom thinks.
Yeah. So we learn very quickly that Danny, the character that Danny's playing, is a disturbed boy. So
well,
he has this
Danny too.
Oh, okay. So yeah. that made it easy. So he's got a imaginary friend named uh-huh. Tony who he makes
Mrs. Torrance.
Oh my gosh. I hate that voice. Yeah. And like that, the finger moves. And so we establish really quickly that Tony, the imaginary friend, does not want to go to the hotel. Mm-hmm. And so when he's alone with Tony,
Tony tells him things.
And so Danny's like, why don't you want to go to the hotel? And so Tony, just for giggles, does this horrific vision of this, all this weird stuff.
What's going to happen?
And next thing you know, they never say exactly what Danny was doing to himself, but something happened. So like, you know,
well, like passed out, not like
he passed
not
out or something.
Harm, I don't think.
Well, but it was open ended because they were like, you know, there was something disturbing about how she found him. Mm-hmm. And so we established not only does Danny have these kind of like some sort of mental issues that Shelley keeps trying to talk away, but we also learned that Jack Nicholson has hurt Danny before. And again, Shelley is trying to just act like, oh my gosh, yeah. I was totally getting battered wife vibes. Like just nervous.
It's
and
one of
like,
them things.
Yeah. So you just don't know what's, so everything is just creepy.
He like dislocated his the kid's shoulder in while he was
exactly.
drunk because he was just trying to grab him.
So he's an alcoholic. You know how those things go, but
he said he would never touch another drop.
Yeah. So we cut from there. Yes.
it's just weird to see
so many cigarettes in that movie.
Oh, so many cigarettes indoors. But I didn't understand the costume design for the character of Wendy, which is Shelley Duvall's character. It's just...
It's an awkward time.
So weird.
Yeah, it's like, it's
Why
not...
Why are they putting her in these? Just like a deranged kindergarten teacher.
Oh my gosh. Anyway. Yeah, that you nailed it. Yes.
Thank you. So hard cut to...
A hard cut next to the family going up to the hotel, and we have this creepy scene in the car. Like, it's not always overt. It's just, no. But the relationship between Danny and Jack is just...
It's weird. It's like, what is up with that guy?
Yeah, something's wrong here.
It made me wonder, like, how did they meet? Why are they together? Like...
Yeah, it was
They've been together for like probably 10 years.
Well, one of the things I hate, and I realize it's part of it, it seems like it's probably just an abusive relationship where Shelley has to be the homemaker and mom and
protector son.
And Jack's just being Jack. So we get to the hotel. Mm-hmm. Beautiful set. Oh my gosh. And I realize we watched the documentary that was also on the DVD that Vivian Kubrick, his daughter, who's 17, has given up.
She just runs around with the camera.
Camera and can go wherever she wants, basically. So we know that hotel is a set, but oh my gosh, it looks palatial. Mm-hmm. It is such a good set. And part of it is we also see these huge dolly scenes, which adds to the grandeur of how big the
hotel is. Yeah, because they're just tracking them as they're walking through.
And again, it was also the kind of this voyeuristic, like, oh, you're just kind of watching from afar what's happening.
People are like working to close down.
Yeah,
the
so they're closing down and getting the last things. Yeah. And then we meet the head chef, who is
Mr. Halloran,
who does a really good job,
played by Scatman Carruthers.
He is great. And so,
I love him. He's just so endearing. I loved him immediately.
Oh yeah, he was total guardian angel type of dude.
Yes.
And so basically, Jack and his wife are called away, and so they're like, Wendy was called away, and so they're like, oh, we'll just leave you with the head chef because I've known you for 5 seconds.
But he's a guardian angel, so it's okay.
Yeah. So and in the midst of this,
ice cream.
So in the midst of this, we kind of find out, and as we're kind of walking through the whole setup of the kitchen, which becomes important later. So we kind of establish that the head chef is just calling the boy by his nickname.
Doc,
which I don't believe was said.
It was not.
Before that point. And so Shelley Duvall is like, oh, isn't that funny? How did you know?
We call him Doc.
And he just kind of explains away. Oh, I kind of heard it. And she's like, well, I don't know. Okay. Yeah, it's just Shelley is so vulnerable through this whole, like, my inner white knight was just like at full attention, wanted to race through that TV to help her. And so anyway, so they go off. And so in the midst of this, we have this incredibly touching scene.
Oh, it's
with
my
the head chef
favorite scene in the whole movie.
And the boy. Oh, it's so. It is in the Guinness Book of World Records for the most takes of a scene. I believe it was 148 takes to get that.
I cannot believe that a child would do 148 takes and be that amazing. Like that scene.
Well, you'll notice he's fed ice cream.
That's true.
Which is probably how you get a 7-year-old.
And he's got like an ice cream mustache too. So no, but that scene is so touching to me.
We basically have the family. And again, the family dynamic, even when Jack is supposed to be sane, it's just like, oh my gosh.
So weird and off.
It's just like how many, like the women's lib movement makes so much more sense with this movie. Just on like, if women had to endure that all the time, you're like, oh my, because he's very dismissive to her and like expects her to do all the work. And it was just like,
because she's checking the boilers and turning on, like she's doing all the chores.
We never see Jack.
No.
Look at the boilers, which is like what he's got to do. Mm-hmm. So we watch him breaking down. Mm-hmm. And then
the evil in the house is kind of overtaking him.
Yeah. He says, oh man, I'd give my soul for a drink. And
yes, that part.
Guess what happens?
Guess what happens right after?
Is we have suddenly a bar appears.
The ball is rolling.
And again, that waiter is very cool as well. So,
oh, he's so weird and creepy. Oh,
yeah. And it's just
Lloyd.
So we can't. So anyway, so Jack basically at this point, and we establish that there's a maze out there. There's a big garden maze that'll be super important later on.
Yeah.
And so basically, Jack is deteriorating. Things really turn when Shelley finally looks at the manuscript that Jack has been working on feverishly. And it's basically all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. And he's written it in over and over. And with some typos every once in a while and with different formatting.
Well, and I saw the documentary Room 237. I learned that somebody, Kubrick made someone or some people's type, not just a couple of pages. They typed a ream.
Oh, my God. And the crazy thing is they shot that over and over again because I read, after I saw the movie, I was reading how that is different phrases. So they filmed one for like German, French, Italian are the ones I remember off the top of my head.
What?
Where they took a saying from those cultures and had him, so they changed the phrase.
For each culture.
But later on, we have a scene with her on the stairs where she's got a bat and Jack is just fully deteriorated. And that scene was only like 127 times instead of 148.
But
can you imagine doing that take 100?
No, because it's scary.
So basically what happens is Jack goes crazy. Mm-hmm. Good old head chef shows up because he's been contacted in Miami mentally that, oh, hey, stuff is going down. So he hops a flight. Of course, there's a huge snowstorm.
Huge snowstorm. Takes him 2 days to get there. Oh, has to rent a snow cat to get up to the mountain.
Yeah,
got to
have a snowmobile. And so essentially what ends up happening is the maze comes into play. Uh-huh. And I loved how they had Danny basically outsmart Jack in a really good way that made sense. And, you know, it's just crazy. At the end, we find out that Jack is dead. But the last scene, and I'd be interested in what you think about this. In the last scene, it ends with the picture of like guests at the hotel. Mm-hmm. And the guests are, it's like July 4th, 1921. But there's a person at the bottom of the picture, which doesn't make sense. And I did catch it. The first time. But don't worry. He did it three times just to make sure that you get it.
If you're dumb. Yeah.
And it's Jack Nicholson. So my question to you is, what do you think happened there? How did Jack, is it a past life? Is it, what do you think is going on?
I think that part of it being a horror movie is that there is no answer, right? That's what makes you crazy. I think that there is an evil entity at this hotel. Mm-hmm. I think that Grady, who was the caretaker before, he was taken over by this entity, and this entity got him to murder his whole family and himself. And so now this entity is after Jack. And of course, it was started right after he said, I would give my soul for a drink, right? I don't know if that's connected, but, you know, why would they put it in there if it wasn't? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like the evil then was taking over him to do their bidding. They wanted him to murder his whole family. Now he has like set that Grady, the caretaker, free, because he says, you are the caretaker. You've always been the caretaker. And so now he is part of that evil entity. He is part of that force, and he's always been there. So I don't think he wasn't there in 1920, but I think after all of this happened, he is now part of it, and he's now trapped there.
Yeah, and I wish I could see the photo again. I guess I should have before this. It would be interesting to see if Grady was also in that photograph, if that photograph was all the evil. Yeah. I had a very similar take. Like, I believe that what happened was that Jack wasn't in the picture.
Even though they
talk about how he talks about it's deja vu, and he feels like he knew everything was around every corner, like a caretaker would. And then as the house claimed him, he was kind of inserted into the picture, and just no one would notice because, again, it's just a stupid picture on the wall.
Yeah. And well, it's demon logic. Doesn't make any sense.
I thought it was well written, and I liked the end sequence. I really liked it. I liked when you have these moving pieces happening. I thought they kind of came together really good in the end, which was great. Mm-hmm. And I liked how it can be viewed in different ways. And again, just with the quick Wikipedia search. There are so many people who find so many different meanings.
So many theories and meanings.
About imperialism and, you know, native rights like, you
that
know.
That was in the documentary, too, about, like, all the Native American, like, stuff that was inserted. And so like, it's a comment on the white man.
And with it being July 4th. So is it a spirit who's – anyway, I'm not – you can read the internet. There's a ton of stuff.
Ancient Indian burial ground.
So. And so I liked – and one of the things I loved about the movie is that technically it doesn't have to have been ghosts. You can make the argument that Danny's just crazy. Danny's crazy and Jack just descend, and it really focuses not as much on the ghost as it does on like a man's descent into madness. Mm-hmm. So is he just having a psychological breakdown?
However,
at the end, when Jack is put into like the food locker,
that's what I was going to say.
The ghost frees him. But this is the thing, is that we never see the ghost free him.
No, we so never it, see it, the door open
so
either.
It could still be in his mind and he got out a different way somehow. And so it's like you can argue, and usually I hate that in movies. I want to know, what is your interpretation? I think what happened, and I usually love, like, look, tell me what the universal laws are here. Like, I will believe any fantasy universe you give me as long as you give me the rules.
You will suspend your disbelief. I like how this contradicts my whole thoughts about Clue. But anyway.
It does take a while to get going. There are some kind of blocks which aren't completely explained that kind of set things up at the end. I don't like the stories of, like, again, how the movie was made. And again, and there's always this question of how far should you go for your art? And like Shelley Duvall, unfortunately, we found out about some like mental health issues she's had. Now, Jack Nicholson was just hanging out with Angelica Houston.
Right.
And his
being Jack.
Yeah, just being Jack in London. Yeah. And she was off near the set.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was
doing 127 takes of someone chasing her.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But that being said, I started double thumbs in the middle. It's not a movie for everybody, but I definitely, like 98% of all movie watchers, would give it a double thumbs up.
Wow.
I don't need to watch it again soon, but it is a very well done movie. Clearly some of the things that the camera shots at times.
Oh my gosh. Like, can we talk about the one, the shot where, when he's in the food locker or whatever, and they're shooting up.
Yeah.
And as he's standing up against the door,
you can see the frustration, literally his head, the top of his head is on the door.
Yeah.
And he's just looking down, and Jack might be insane and crazy, but like you can read on his face how he's kind of trying to, what can I say to get, and he does like three different strategies to try to get her to open the door.
Tactics.
It's incredibly shot.
And then so, the Kubrick stare when he's going mad and he's standing there and he's got the crazy look on his face and he's barely blinking and they just like slowly close up on him.
That to me was The Shining.
Wow. Give me an axe.
No, no axes in the house.
Come on, my dad does it. All right, well, we have just watched Memento, and it was momentous.
It was.
So, Keith, I know that you had said that you'd only seen it once, but it had made such an impression on you that you wanted to talk about it. So, did it impress you as much as it had before?
Yeah, it was absolutely excellent. Still definitely two thumbs up for me. I had forgotten somehow that this was written and directed by Christopher Nolan. It was like his second movie. And one of the things that he did in his first three movies following Memento and Insomnia is he used all of these narrative devices and camera tricks to literally put you in the position of the protagonist. And so he did that in spades in this movie. And yeah, it was absolutely excellent. I'm glad I got to see it again.
Nice. Well, so I know that you're probably expecting me to give you a pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked on a pitch.
Oh, okay.
This story is about a man with short-term memory loss who hunts down the man who raped and killed his wife and gave him this brain injury. I was trying to be succinct.
You were very succinct.
Thank you. So the cast we have for this movie is, of course, Guy Pearce is in the role of Lenny.
Mm-hmm.
And then Teddy was a little confusing for me at first. I think I was lost because of the hair. Initially I thought it was Bill Burr.
He's kind of like Bill Burr's like shorter but bigger brother. You know what I mean? When you have those situations happen. So
Well, and I was like, that can't be right. That can't be Bill Burr. So, but it was Joe Pantoliano from The Matrix.
I will believe that pronunciation.
And then also Natalie, played by Carrie Ann Moss, which I'm just now realizing as I'm looking at my notes that those two were both of The Matrix together.
They
I
were.
just realized that. And then we have, of course, Mr. Sammy Jenkins is played by the guy who did Ned Ryerson from
From
Groundhog
Groundhog Day.
Day.
Yeah, it was
Needlenose
cool.
Ned.
We did a high five when he appeared on the screen. We were like, oh, Ned Ryerson. We were like, Ned Ryerson.
I always love seeing him in movies. And then a little kind of little surprise, little gift for us was Thomas Lennon from Reno 911 and other things played like a clinician or doctor in this.
Yeah, not intentionally in a comedic role, but he did great.
That's kind of the main cast.
And just to say, it's Stephen Tobolowsky is Ryerson
Oh,
from
yeah.
Groundhog Day.
Well,
So
I.
Stephen was
He will
great.
always be Ned Ryerson to me,
That is
always.
true.
I feel like every time we watch one of these movies, I have a technical issue.
I think pretty much daily in life you have some sort of technical issue or two. Just saying, nothing wrong with that. I have technical issues all the time as well. But yes.
I'm just more like verbal about my technical issues and dramatic. But yeah, I saw this movie on Tubi, and on Tubi there's no subtitles. And I have not watched anything without subtitles since about 7 years ago when we had an infant who would just like to scream and cry and would only stop if we turned the vacuum cleaner on.
So it was hilarious because I had set up, we don't normally set anything up, but I told Corey, like, we
You
got to have a
warned
light
me.
on. You're going to have a notebook and you're going to need to have a pen. You're going to need to take notes for this one.
I always take notes,
Yeah, but it will, but yeah, but you got to really pay
but actual
attention.
notes.
Got into like 2 seconds and Corey was like, oh no. And like, she's like, I'm going to have to turn that up. And she was jumping on the volume key to.
So that was my technical issue for this movie. So this movie is told in reverse, and you know that it's going to be all in reverse because the first scene does this quick rewind sequence. So that's how you know that's what's going to happen. But it took me like a loop or two to figure that out. This movie has two timelines, which really helps out. One of the timelines, it's in black and white, so you can tell that it's different from the other, and it's told it's in a more linear fashion, and we get lots of information, and it kind of centers us after each loop. And then we have a second timeline, that's the one that's in reverse.
Yeah, I think since Christopher Nolan is British, I wonder if he's a big fan of Alan Moore, who's a comic book writer who famously
I know who
uses
Alan
that.
Moore is
Yeah, from
because Johnny
Watchmen.
Depp
And so it was, well, okay, that's not how
from Hell, I
I
believe.
am just glad. Yeah, that comic is so much better than that movie. But anyway, but what he did in Watchmen, which was
But it
great,
was about Jack the Ripper, which
is
is.
he had the main story that was going, and then he had a side story at the end of each issue, which ended up totally tying in. And not to spoil anything, because we're gonna have to spoil everything, the side story is gonna be crucial to the understanding of the movie.
Speaking of spoiling, I'm sorry, guys. Like, this is so complicated and intricate. Like, I'm gonna spoil it.
Yeah,
Plus, it gets spoiled anyway at the beginning, and I'll tell you. On that, it loops a lot, which you would think that would be a problem for me, but somehow I was okay with it. So I'm kind of wondering what my problem with Clue was.
I think a lot of people are wondering. That's the biggest feedback we got from that episode. What's wrong with Corey?
I don't know, you guys. I just don't like Clue. So we have a scene. It opens on a Polaroid picture of a dead guy. And as you're watching it, you're realizing that the image is getting more blurry and more blurry. And then he shakes it a little bit. And so then you realize, oh, okay, we're going backwards because the image is fading.
It's
And
just it's ingenious on how he did that, because it doesn't, you can't tell what's happening at first. You just see him shake it, and everyone's used to shaking a Polaroid.
Which I need to have this aside right now. I have a stance and I need to get on my soapbox right now. Polaroid pictures don't work like that. They do not develop because you are shaking them and getting air on them. They need to be in the light to develop because light is what develops film.
And I'm just going to have to say hey out of that because you'd be an outcast in not shaking it because the
Okay.
song says you got to shake it like a Polaroid picture.
Okay, well, I resent that song, and I am resenting the dad joke that you just made. Polaroids don't work like that, you guys, and it is a huge pet peeve of mine. So anyway, now that I got that out of the way. So as I said, we start with Lenny's looking at this Polaroid, and it's of a dead man. We learn that he has just killed him, and he is the guy who raped his wife and killed her and was a drug dealer, and his name is John G. And in this scuffle is where Lenny hits his head and gets his short-term memory loss, and ever since then he's been on the hunt. Now, I'm going to mention something. I'm going to circle back to it later. So, there is this character named Sammy Jenkins, which Ned Ryerson plays. And he has a tattoo, Lenny does, on his hand that says, "Remember Sammy Jenkins." And so the reason why we remember Sammy Jenkins is that Lenny, in his previous life, used to be an insurance adjuster or investigator. And he got this case where Sammy Jenkins had short-term memory loss. And he had to decide, is he faking? Is this a psychological issue? Is this a physical issue?
And can I just say that what his name, Sammy Jenkins, just kills me. I hate it when made-up names are made. Because Corey and I were talking about it, and we were like, is it Jenkins? Is it Jenkins? And it's like it's written on his hand, so you
Yeah,
can't really
but
see
it's
it.
kind of tiny. So he tells this Sammy Jenkins story in the black and white timeline to kind of help us to make sense of what's going on with Lenny, because Lenny also has short-term memory loss. Now, what that means is Lenny knows who he is. He remembers everything up until the point where he hits his head at his wife's murder, and then now he can't make new memories.
He can remember stuff just as long as his attention is on it. So
And also 15 minutes is about.
I would be so gone if I had this because I always have five trains of thought. So
Can't even imagine.
I can't even imagine me with this condition.
So anyway, so we realize that Lenny has killed Teddy, who he thinks is the drug dealer murderer. So we're gonna back up. We back up. We see that he's holding an envelope. It's got information in it. It's a driver's license and a registration. And this confirms that Teddy is actually John Gamble, John G. And he actually, we know that John G killed his wife because he has a tattoo on his chest written backwards so he can read it in the mirror that says, "Your wife was raped and murdered by John
John
G."
G killed and raped your wife.
So, speaking of tattoos, in the black and white timeline, we find out that how Lenny keeps track of things is he's staying at this motel, and he not only has a tattoo of "Remember Sammy Jenkins" on his hand, but all important information such as "Your wife was murdered" is tattooed on his body. Some of it's been tattooed with a tattoo artist, and some of it he's doing himself. He also has a bunch of Polaroids that he takes of people and places, and then he makes notes on the Polaroids, and then he addendums the notes, annotates the notes
Yeah,
as well.
so he can write, because again, he can only think straight for like 15 minutes at a time. So he can write like just phrases
Right,
on
because
these.
he can barely remember.
And then he has the serial killer map of like mapping out his life,
Yeah,
you know,
with like the red like yarn pointing at pictures
which
and
is
stuff.
somewhat like the notes I see in front of you with all the color coding and everything, but yours are much neater,
My
much nicer,
notes
much
are
neater.
rainbow coated, and also they are scented ink. So if I get stressed out, I'm just gonna sniff. In that timeline, also, he has his wife's murder case file that he pores over and talks to himself. So these are all the things that we see that help us kind of keep things straight, and that's how he keeps things straight. So lot of tattoos, a lot of strange tattoos. I just kept thinking, I wonder what the tattoo artist thought about that. But anyway, we're gonna back up
So
again.
another scene backs it up again. So what happened right before that?
Yes. And we realize that the person who gave him this information about John G is some lady named Natalie, and she's helping him to get the information. We're going to back up again. I'm running past a lot. It turns out Natalie is helping him because he helped her. Question mark? We're going to back up again. He is in the middle of running some guy named Dodd out of town for this Natalie because he believes that Dodd has beaten Natalie up. And she says it's because she's mixed up with her missing drug dealer boyfriend and all his dealings he's missing. And so they think, you know, she's part of that. And so she says that this guy Dodd has beat her up. We're going to back up again. Teddy pops up. He says, hey, you know, Lenny, you shouldn't trust Natalie. But on Lenny's notes about Teddy under his picture, it says, this guy lies.
Don't trust him.
So everything Teddy ever says, Lenny just kind of looks at the picture and goes, yeah, well, you're a liar, so I'm not going to believe you. Before Teddy mentioned, I was like, you know, there's a couple people go like in this story, and I'm wondering if everybody's on the up and up. I bet somebody is taking advantage of him. I bet. So then we back up again and we see that Natalie is actually using Lenny to get Dodd out of town. And so she's taking advantage of this and she gets Lenny to punch her in the face. So it looks like when she tells the story about how Dodd beat her up, that Dodd beat her up. But actually she says all these horrible, terrible things about his dead wife. And she pretty much tells him what she's doing. She's going to use him and he's not even going to remember. And then she takes all the pens out of the house and she takes off and he's just like looking around the house for a pen so he can write down on her picture what he knows. But he can't do it. And she goes and waits in the car for a couple minutes and then she comes back in the house.
And sure enough, like any loud noise, anytime that you in life would be like, oh, what's that? Like that immediately lose your train of thought. He loses everything. It.
So then we back up again. Lenny's driving and he finds a note in his pocket. It's on a bar coaster to meet this person named Natalie. It's in his pocket. So he goes to the bar and he shows up and Natalie is pissed off because she sees that he showed up in her boyfriend's car and he's wearing her boyfriend's suit. So obviously he's the reason that her boyfriend is now missing. And so we back up again and Lenny is getting a tattoo of a license plate. And this license plate turns out to be Teddy's license plate. And Teddy shows up and he tells him, you know, hey, you really need to watch out. This bad cop is using you. And we learn that he's the one that's been calling him in the black and white timeline. But again, he looks at Teddy's picture and it says, Teddy's a liar. Don't trust him. So he doesn't trust him. So before we do the last backup, the last flashback of this, it's really important that I catch you up to the Sammy Jenkins storyline. So as you know, Sammy Jenkins was a guy that he investigated as an insurance adjuster or investigator or whatever he was, and he had short-term memory loss. The thing about Sammy Jenkins' case is that Lenny found a loophole to say that, well, you know, this case is probably psychological, it's probably not physical. I'm not saying he's faking, but he found this loophole where they don't have to pay out.
And so his insurance company is so happy for capitalism and mm-hmm. absolutely destroying that man's life. And so Lenny gets a promotion.
He gets a promotion. And so the wife of Sammy Jenkins, she comes and visits Lenny one last time and is like, could you just tell me without all this insurance BS, what do you think? And Lenny says he can't bring himself to say anything, but I think your husband can create new memories.
Because if he had admitted something else, he was afraid that she would use it against him and do an appeal and so on and mm-hmm. so forth.
She just wants like some validation and help. And so, of course, he ruins that whole thing. So then she just kind of completely deteriorates. She, instead of helping Sammy and loving Sammy and trying to get past this and figure out how to live life with this condition, she starts like hiding food on him instead of feeding him.
Because she's just so mad at him. Like that he obviously has done something wrong, yet
And she's trying to test him. She's trying to catch him.
Yeah, because she doesn't understand how possibly, because clearly he has this huge issue.
So what ends up happening is she's just done. She's on her last leg. She is a diabetic, it just so happens. And so he gives her her insulin shots. And that was something that he had done before. And so he knows how to do it. And so one day she decides she's going to test him. And this is going to be the final test. So she says, Sammy, it's time for my insulin injection. So Sammy looks like a little puppy dog, prepares the injection, injects her, goes and sits down to finish watching his show. And she looks at him and she says, Sammy, it's time for my insulin injection. And so he prepares it, shoots her in another spot, finishes, goes, sits down, tries to watch his show. Sammy, like four times. She dies because she's like in insulin shock, whatever. So he's like killed her. So the sad ending to that story, and it's so sad because Lenny's got the voiceover talking about it. And Sammy is sitting in this institution by himself, has no idea that his wife is dead, has no idea that he killed his wife. He's just sitting there. And every time someone walks by, he like perks up like, oh, they're going to come talk to me like a little puppy dog. And he's just sitting there.
And just crushed every time someone walks by because he clearly doesn't know what's going on.
He has no idea what's going on. And he thinks, oh, these people are going to come talk to me. And then they don't. And then anyway, really sad. Mm-hmm. So back to
the our final abandoned flashback.
The final flashback, our abandoned factory. So he shows up to the abandoned factory and he ambushes what is Natalie's boyfriend. Okay. So Natalie's boyfriend shows up in the car that we have seen Lenny in this whole entire time. He shows up in the suit that Lenny's been wearing this whole entire time. Lenny makes him take the suit off. He kills the guy because he thinks that this is John G., the murderer, drug dealer, rapist of his wife. So then Teddy shows up out of the blue and he's like, doesn't know who he is at first. And he checks his Polaroids and he realizes, oh, okay, this is Teddy. So Teddy confesses to him, hey, you and I'm a cop. I'm the cop that's been dealing with you this whole entire time. I've been watching over you. I've been with you for this whole time. We killed John G. a year ago. We found him and killed him. And so that was solved a year ago. And since then, we learned that Teddy is the bad cop. He has been using Lenny ever since then to go after whoever he wants to go after.
Make a little money on the side, like in the case of this John G, who's a drug dealer. So there's 200K in the back of the Jaguar. And
yes.
And yeah, it, this whole talk kind of starts because Lenny has done it in his mind.
Mm-hmm.
He's finished. But he doesn't feel anything. And so Teddy starts to explain what's going on. And he's just like, yeah, you know, you've
done this a bunch of times.
Yeah. And he actually has a photo of one of the Polaroids is of him like happy, the Lenny happy.
Because
and he claims that, hey, that's the first time. Right. That's when we killed the real John G.
That's when we got him and you were happy. And so he's like, no. And then he starts saying, you know, Sammy Jenkins. And he's like, Sammy Jenkins, let me tell you, Sammy Jenkins didn't even have a wife. Your wife survived this attack. You're the one who had the short-term memory loss. And she was actually diabetic. Kind of like saying Sammy Jenkins' wife is actually Lenny's wife. Mm. So that scene I was talking about where we see Sammy Jenkins sitting in the institution by himself. Really quick, Lenny's face is like taking the place of Sammy Jenkins in this institution. Your wife was the one that was a diabetic and you killed your wife because you didn't know and she couldn't deal with it and what have you.
And I was feeling sorry for you and I felt like you deserved some justice. And so I helped you find the first John G. And that's why you have the case file and
pouring over. And yeah, so Lenny doesn't want to believe this. And I don't know if it's maybe because if this is now over, he has nothing to do. So Lenny decides that, you know, no, this isn't, we're not going to do this. So he then writes on Teddy's Polaroid, do not trust him. He's a liar. You need to kill him.
Because what we've realized is in the midst of this, when Teddy's talking about it, he said, look, John G, because Lenny's like, how could you possibly be doing this? Like, how could this work? And he's like, well, John G is such a common name. I'm a John G.
Right.
And so
his
you
name's
just call
Teddy,
me.
But Teddy's is his nickname. He's actually, his name is John Gamble, which we learn in the very, very beginning is who he's looking for. And so what he does is he copies down Teddy's license plate and makes a note to have a tattoo made up later. And that's when we see him in the tattoo parlor of Teddy's license plate, and writes down, "Don't trust Teddy. Don't trust this man. He's a liar. You need to kill him." So basically setting up all these false clues for himself for when his memory resets, he will then go after Teddy and kill Teddy. And that is actually what happens in the very beginning of the movie, is that he has just killed Teddy. And that is the plot, as best as I could tell it.
You did an excellent job. There's some, there's several things we skipped
there's
over, but
so much.
But that was a lot of the crucial information you'd have to do. Yeah. Just if you need cliff notes, if you need cliff notes of what happened.
My rainbow notes. So I just want to kind of talk a little bit about the things I liked. Mm-hmm. I can't believe I'm saying this. I really like that it was told in reverse, because I was discovering things along with Lenny, and I felt like I had no short-term memory like Lenny. Like, I could feel like that.
Yeah, which was incredible. Like, you have nothing to go on except what's happening in that moment. Yeah. You have no idea what happened before, which is, again, similar to what Christopher Nolan did, like, with Following. It's about kind of like being a peeping Tom. So the way he shoots that with Insomnia, main character is an insomniac. And so the color saturation and the kind of unreliable narrator type things that happen when you don't sleep at all are happening through that movie. So yeah, excellent. Absolutely excellent.
Yeah. And so again, I mean, this was really well written and really well edited, really well done, because it could have been a hot mess, but it wasn't. And then also Joe Pantoliano. Joe, he was great. He was my favorite character. Things that I didn't quite like. Again, I've already said my stance on Polaroids. I didn't like. I mean, it's irrelevant because it didn't actually happen, but I guess it kind of did. I didn't like Sammy's wife. Like, why didn't we just love Sammy and try to help him out? Why did we have to try to trick him? Like, who cares what a company thinks? Who cares what Lenny thinks? What do you think? You know, like, take care of him and help him. So that I didn't like.
As your husband, I love that's your note for that portion.
Ever get short-term memory loss?
I've got a shot at least. And I'll remember this. That'll be written on my hand. Remember the Memento podcast will be tattooed on my hand so I can remember that she'll love me forever.
I will. That's a promise. The other thing kind of takes us off into a direction. I didn't quite understand why he had to burn his wife's stuff at one point, but I guess I kind of get it because he's trying to forget that it's happening, I guess. I don't know.
That part was also, there was a couple, so kind of like this universe is he can't make you new memories, but there's a couple things that kind of, yeah, we're not exactly sure why he, you know, making up the story with Sammy Jenkins and his wife, if he can't make new memories, right. I guess we're just supposed to believe he's got this psychic break. Like, you know, he's has a condition, but you think he's sane in the beginning. And by the end, it's very clear that no, he's just really insane. And like, I think that
he doesn't care. He's a sociopath.
Like, there's something that breaks when he has that conversation.
Well, and maybe it's that he can't believe that his wife couldn't handle him, and so she did that.
Why does he target Teddy? I think it's just an existential break where he realizes, because again, you're like, you're telling me that kind of makes sense, but there's no way I'll ever know.
Right.
And so just to complete this kind of like this suicide pact for himself, it's like,
sad.
I'm just going to kill that guy so I never hear that story again. And who knows, I'm just.
But that's so sad and dumb, because he's the only one who knows what's going on. And now he's killed the only person, his only lifeline he's killed. And the other thing is that Carrie Ann Moss, I felt she was way too prissy and had such a nice house to like have a boyfriend who looked like a drug dealer from Central Casting. And she was like way too prissy and.
I think they did that on purpose just to throw you off so you don't know what's going on. But yeah, it's like
her house was nice. Like,
well, it's considered, you know, middle class. It was like,
she just
it wasn't
didn't seem
great.
Like she was running with drug dealers and that she was hard up.
I would love to see what Mary McCormick from In Plain Sight, that USA TV show, would do with this role, because it's much more of the type of role that she'll play where it's like, you know, I'm pretty, but I'm really tough. Like, you don't want to mess with me.
And then I also felt bad. Like, it was funny because when he was talking to the hotel manager and telling him, I have this condition for like the fourth time. I was like, oh, I bet that hotel. Because the hotel manager says, I don't have a problem with it as long as you pay. I'm like, well, how many times have you made him pay?
It's interesting to realize that in some parallel universe, this movie starred Brad Pitt, who was the original star of this movie and then had to drop out of it.
I could see him. Because it's very Fight Club.
Yeah, so Brad Pitt was going to be the original star of this movie, and he would have done excellent. Aaron Eckhart and...
Aaron Eckhart is too nice.
Yeah, I don't know. But that being said, you know, so somewhere, yeah, in my imagination, there's a movie of this of Brad Pitt and Mary McCormick as the two stars. But it was very well done. Guy Pearce does a great job as a man unhinged. And I like how he keeps the crazy at bay.
He's not acting crazy.
Part of that's a script. Mm-hmm. Part of that is an excellent performance by Guy Pearce. So
my thumbs were in the middle.
Okay.
Starting off. I will have to say, this is not my type of movie. I don't ever need to see it again. However, I thought it was very well done. And so I'm going to give it 2 thumbs up.
Nice.
Were you expecting that?
I was not expecting 2 thumbs up from you. Like, when I was thinking, it's like, it's a made up story.
It's all over the place.
Backwards. You have to have like a national treasure map, mm-hmm. you know, to of figure anything out.
That are scented.
Yeah. I also am double thumbs up. Don't need to see. I'm a little afraid to see it again because I think the more times you see it
apart,
the more you pick it apart and say, okay, that doesn't work. Yeah. But yeah, it's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, definitely go see it.
As a movie, it's a good movie. It's not going to be like a favorite that I watch over and over again, but I can appreciate that it was very well done. So
I would never have guessed that you would have double thumbs up. That's awesome.
Well, I'm always surprising you. So
that's true.
I told you I was a loose cannon. Well, I cannot believe how many thumbs are up in the air right now.
Yeah, we're shaking them like we just don't care. Look at us. 4 thumbs up.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Go marriage.
But not like a Polaroid picture. Because that's not how it works.
All right.
So anyway.
So what we got for next week?
So for next week, we kind of decided to change it up a little bit again. Mm-hmm. So I love the whole Christopher Guest universe. Mm-hmm. Spinal Tap, Best in Show, Mighty Wind, Waiting for Guffman.
The Guestiverse.
The Guestiverse. That's right. I was trying to think of a good, but I couldn't. So thank you. That's what I have you for. The corny stuff. So yes, I decided my absolute favorite one. It was a really tough call, but I would like you to watch Waiting for Guffman.
Okay. Yeah. So I know some people are going, Keith, what is your problem?
Yep.
And cause I'm double thumbs down. I would never watch this movie if we weren't doing this podcast.
And I know.
And that is because I don't know why. I hate embarrassing moments in movies and TV shows. I hate watching
people
them.
People are making a fool of themselves.
And from whenever I have seen just blips of Best in Show or or any of these other Guestiverse movies, outside of Spinal Tap, all of it is like, hey, we're going to put this really sweethearted person in a horrible, embarrassing situation that will scar them psychologically for life.
Oh, but you don't know. You have to see.
Okay.
Maybe
all
that
right.
won't happen.
So what we did is, so basically what happened is Corey said, I want you to watch Waiting for Guffman. So we need to watch something. So what's yours? And I'm like, okay. So I'm like, all right. So what I know of Waiting for Guffman is it has something to do with like actors trying to get their big break or something and mm-hmm. doing incredibly embarrassing things about wanting to be an actor. So I thought, okay, it's not acting, but one of my favorite movies, which I can't believe you haven't seen, is That Thing You Do, mm-hmm. which isn't about acting, but about a band. And
I was trying to get their big break, right?
It's from what I remember, it's Tom Hanks's first director/writing.
Oh.
And it's just, so going in, I was like, I like Tom Hanks, but I don't know how this is going to go. Uh-huh. And I loved it. So it's got a song, which I know will be on repeat on our house for the next 6 weeks to 2 months to 6 years.
That's what I'm scared of, is this music.
Super catchy song. Okay. I think so. So where are you, double thumbs down? Are you thumbs in the middle?
Okay. But
you haven't seen it. So what's going on here?
I don't really. All I know is that Steve Zahn is in it. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I love Steve Zahn.
I totally agree. He is hilarious.
So I'm going to say I don't really know a whole lot about it. I'm a little scared that it's a musical. I don't know. I like Tom Hanks. So I'm going to be 2 thumbs in the middle because I don't know what I'm getting into.
All right. All right. I think that's fair.
All right. So that's what we're watching for next week, guys.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody listening out there. We really appreciate it.
Yep. And if you want to, you can visit our Facebook page. It's just He Saw, She Saw. And you can check out pictures that illustrate the things that we talk about that you can't see. You can look at my really well done Photoshop movie posters that I've done.
Amazing.
Which Keith pointed out today, you always use the same picture of us.
It only took me 4 episodes to realize she was using the same head for both.
I just flip them around. Okay. I'm getting really good at, like, it's not Photoshop. It's like Microsoft Word. I just learned how to remove the background. So I'm going remove background nuts. But anyway, you can check us out there. Please, please, please like us or follow us or like whatever it is that you have to do.
If there's some way to subscribe or something,
because that really helps us out. And we like to like go to our analytics or whatever and see like how, there's another listen. And it's like really exciting for us. So if you would like to follow us, that'd be great because then we can kind of get more out there and spread the word.
Yeah. We're doing better than we initially thought.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But I know that our sound is kind of a little wacky right now. I should never have avoided doing sound during my theater training. I am paying for it now. I'm trying to figure it out. So please bear with us as I try to figure out all the different. It's hard. I almost gave up yesterday.
It's just that thing you do.
Okay. We'll see you next week. Bye.